The rational male, preventative medicine, has become a cornerstone text in modern masculinity discussions, with millions of men crediting Rollo Tomassi's work with fundamentally transforming their understanding of male-female dynamics. What makes this book particularly powerful is its unapologetic approach to revealing truths about intersexual relationships that most people intuitively sense but rarely articulate. While controversial in mainstream circles, the book has developed a cult following among men seeking to understand why their relationships consistently follow predictable patterns despite their best intentions. Even celebrities like Joe Rogan have referenced concepts from Tomassi's work, and the book's influence continues to grow as more men discover its insights through word-of-mouth recommendations rather than traditional marketing channels. Understanding women's behavior requires recognizing that their priorities and attraction triggers shift dramatically throughout their lives. Tomassi presents a comprehensive timeline of female maturation that helps men anticipate and navigate these changes rather than being blindsided by them. During the teen phase, ages 15 to 25, young women prioritize physical attraction and social status when selecting mates. This explains why even introverted men can be perceived as alpha if they possess the right physical features. Without life experience or provisioning concerns, teenage girls focus primarily on visceral arousal and physical attraction. Their mate selection revolves around what feels good in the moment rather than long-term considerations. This period often concludes with what Tomassi calls the break phase, typically occurring during a young woman's senior year of high school. As college approaches, she faces conflict between continuing a monogamous teenage relationship or pursuing sexual independence with new options. This creates major frustration for young men who believe their loyalty and support will be rewarded. Statistically, high school relationships frequently end as women's options expand while men's options constrict due to prioritizing the relationship over personal goals. Between ages 20 to 25, women enter the party years, experiencing their peak SMV around ages 22 to 23. During this phase, women enjoy maximum sociosexual options and develop self-assurance due to the opportunities their SMV creates. Physical attraction remains paramount, but status and wealth potential gain importance as women recognize their sexual agency's transactional nature. Women begin preferring older men, typically 4 to 6 years older, as they develop appreciation for confidence and alpha character traits. Understanding this timeline provides young men with crucial insights that can prevent painful lessons later in life. As Tomassi explains, this roadmap helps men anticipate and prepare for women's hypergamy optimization strategies throughout their lives. Between ages 28-30, women enter what Tomassi calls the epiphany phase, a conscious awareness that their SMV is declining relative to younger competition. This isn't about hitting the wall suddenly, but recognizing diminished capacity to compete sexually for desirable men. During this phase, women rationalize their past choices. I've grown personally. I've learned my lesson about bad boys, while broadcasting newfound maturity to provider-type men they previously ignored. Their attraction priorities shift from physical and alpha traits toward dependability, provisioning capacity, humor, and compatibility. Some return to religious convictions or embrace celibacy to signal their reformed values. The transitionary phase, 29 to 31, forces women to reassess their self-perception as competition anxiety increases. Women who can't secure commitment begin complaining that men need to man up, a phrase rarely uttered by younger women still enjoying peak SMV. Social conventions emerge to absolve women of accountability, blaming men for being threatened by powerful women or having fragile egos, rather than acknowledging the consequences of prioritizing alpha excitement during their party years. For beta men, the epiphany phase seems like their ship has finally come in. Their strategy of patience and perseverance will be rewarded. They've been conditioned to believe they'll receive the best a woman has to offer sexually. The painful reality is that for alpha widows marrying betas, sex becomes reserved, self-restrained, and self-conscious because she knows it lacks the intensity of her prior lovers. She rationalizes this by claiming she's doing it for the right reasons this time, primarily securing long-term provisioning and pregnancy. As one man painfully observed, "I got married to a whore that fucks like a prude." After securing commitment, women enter the security phase, where their focus shifts to maintaining the relationship and often starting a family. This phase typically lasts 7 to 9 years, during which a woman contents herself with domestic life, often including work and motherhood. However, after about 7 years of marriage, a psychological reevaluation occurs, the famous 7-year itch. This phenomenon coincides with children becoming more autonomous, around age 7, allowing both parents to reassess their relationship. For women, this means comparing her provider husband's actualized SMV against idealizations of past alpha lovers or imagined upgrades. From an evolutionary perspective, this timing aligns with when children become more self-sufficient, requiring less male investment. A second reevaluation typically occurs at the 20-year mark when couples become empty nesters. During the development phase, women experience an internal schism. While they crave enduring security, intensifying with each child, they simultaneously yearn for the alpha qualities they enjoyed in their party years. For married women who settled for provider males, this manifests as relentless shit testing, both testing his provisioning capacity and waiting for the alpha qualities she hoped he'd develop. After the first child arrives, a woman's priorities shift dramatically. Sex becomes a utility, a reward for desired behavior rather than genuine passion. This turning extends beyond the bedroom as the beta husband finds himself increasingly compared to other men and the ghosts of alphas from her past. When confronted with his sexual discontent, he faces shaming tactics. Is sex all that's important to you? At the heart of female sexual strategy lies hypergamy, women's evolved biological imperative to secure both the best genetic material and the best provisioning from men. Since these qualities rarely exist in the same male, women have developed social conventions and methodologies to optimize their innate hypergamous nature. This dual mating strategy is driven by women's hormonal cycles. During ovulation, women's brains respond differently to masculinized faces, particularly in regions involved in evaluating risk and reward. During their follicular phase, women prefer more masculine features, indicating high testosterone despite potential risks of abandonment. This biological phenomenon forms the basis of the alpha fucks, beta bucks principle, women's dual mating strategy seeking optimal genetic benefits and parental investment. Women's preferences shift throughout their cycle, with the proliferative phase, days 7 to 14, being the alpha phase when women are most receptive to masculine traits, and the luteal phase being the beta phase when comfort and nurturing qualities become more attractive. Hypergamy isn't static, but varies based on a woman's self-perceived sexual market value and her ability to capitalize on it. Women face a primary struggle of managing their limiting conditions while contending with hard-coded hypergamy before their attractiveness declines. They must balance between cashing in too early, missing a more optimal man, or too late, settling for someone suboptimal. In today's society, hypergamy has become increasingly unrestrained. As Sheryl Sandberg advised women, date the bad boys, the cool boys, the commitment-phobic boys, the crazy boys, but do not marry them. This represents a blatant admission of feminine hypergamy that the manosphere has been highlighting for over a decade. One of the most painful aspects of unplugging from blue pill conditioning is confronting the harsh reality that men and women experience love differently. Men, as the true romantics, approach love idealistically, expecting women to love them as they love women, unconditionally and without reservation. This idealism often stems from early cultural programming through movies, literature, and social expectations that reinforce the notion of pure, sacrificial love. Women, however, love opportunistically, always considering what a man is before investing in who he is, a direct result of their innate hypergamy. This manifests in their continuous assessment of a man's status, resources, and social value, even within established relationships. This difference creates profound disillusionment for men who've built their relationships on the egalitarian myth that both sexes share identical concepts of love. The modern dating landscape particularly amplifies this disconnect, as social media and dating apps have intensified women's natural tendency to evaluate and compare potential mates. Neither approach is inherently wrong. They evolve to be complementary, but failing to recognize this fundamental difference leads to devastating consequences when men discover their romantic investments don't yield the expected returns. This realization often triggers severe emotional trauma and can lead to deep-seated trust issues. The conventional love hierarchy placed men's love flowing toward wife and children, while women's primary love focused on children first, with respect and some affection returning to the man. This natural order reflected evolutionary necessities. Women evolved to bond primarily with offspring to ensure species survival, while men evolved to provide resources and protection. This hierarchy manifested in traditional social structures, where men would sacrifice their lives to protect their families, while women prioritized their children's welfare above all else. Men are the true romantics, conditioned to believe that honest work and decent earnings will secure them the beautiful woman who loves them as they love her. This belief is reinforced through cultural narratives that suggest dedication and provision will guarantee lasting romantic love. Yet the painful truth is that romance cannot be manufactured. It happens spontaneously. A man's carefully planned romantic gestures often mean less to a woman than spontaneous, seemingly insignificant moments that demonstrate high value or social proof. This disparity is particularly evident in long-term relationships, where men often continue their romantic efforts, while women's attraction responds more to demonstrations of status and leadership than to traditional romantic gestures. Understanding these different love hierarchies is crucial for maintaining healthy relationships. Men must learn to navigate this reality without becoming cynical, while still maintaining their capacity for love and romance. This requires developing a balanced perspective that acknowledges both the beauty and limitations of male and female love dynamics. Men are expected to perform. This fundamental truth underpins male existence. Whether performing wheelies on a bicycle to attract attention or earning advanced degrees to ensure success, men must do. Women's arousal, attraction, desire, and love are all rooted in this conditional performance. Many newly red pill aware men feel indignant that they should have to be someone they're not to maintain a woman's interest, as women act like casting agents seeking men to play specific roles. These character expectations change as women mature through different phases, from their party years to their epiphany phase and midlife. The simple fact is that men must internalize their performance. You already are your performance, whether you direct it or not. Women will filter for hypergamous optimization based on how well you align with what they believe they're entitled to in their current SMV perception. For men, there is no true rest from performance, as women's hypergamy demands constant reconfirmation of a man's worthiness. Unlike men's performance standards for women, there is no reciprocal dynamic where women must perform for men, suggesting this is considered misogynistic. Demonstrating higher value, DHV, isn't about posturing or showboating. The best forms of DHV are unintentional and genuine. Walking into a room with evident social proof, or even showing humility in the right context. Whether intentional or not, you cannot remove yourself from the performance equation. You can cease directing your performance, but you cannot exit the game. One of the most common masculine pitfalls since feminine social primacy emerged is the belief that displaying emotional vulnerability makes men more desirable to women. Men raised to be in touch with their feminine sides try to out-emote each other as a mating strategy, believing this demonstrates emotional maturity that women will appreciate. This trend has accelerated with the rise of social media and dating apps, where men frequently attempt to showcase their sensitive nature through carefully curated posts and profiles. Men's concept of idealistic love revolves around being loved regardless of performance. They want freedom from the burden of performance. Not unconditional love, but love that isn't dependent on satisfying a woman's hypergamous requirements. This desire stems from the exhausting nature of constantly maintaining frame, status, and composure. Men secretly long for moments where they can relax this vigilance and still retain attraction, similar to how they imagine women experience love. The vulnerability men believe women will respect isn't the attraction cue they've been conditioned to think it is. During attraction and arousal, women are concerned with a man's capacity to play a role and present an archetype she expects to be attracted to. This can be observed in how women respond differently to emotional displays from high-status men versus average men, and how timing and context dramatically affect the reception of vulnerable moments. Men want to believe that revealing vulnerabilities makes them more human and that a quality woman will excuse his inadequacies. This strength in surrender has two fundamental problems. First, this humanness isn't the attraction cue men believe it is. Second, the humanness men believe they're revealing is itself a psychological construct of the feminine imperative. The modern dating marketplace has reinforced this misconception through media portrayals, relationship advice columns, and social programming that consistently misaligns male vulnerability with female attraction triggers. True vulnerability is not a selling point for attracting women. They want a bulwark against their own emotions, not a co-equal emoter. Women seek men who can weather emotional storms while maintaining composure, not those who mirror their emotional volatility. Vulnerability is never a strength when deliberately revealed with the expectation of female appreciation. It's a weakness, best kept from view except when unintentionally revealed while performing at your best. This dynamic is particularly evident in long-term relationships, where a man's occasional display of genuine vulnerability during moments of triumph or authentic struggle can deepen connection, but calculated emotional displays often achieve the opposite effect. The most successful approach is to understand that vulnerability must be organic, rare, and never weaponized as an attraction strategy. Men who maintain their strength while occasionally showing genuine human moments during times of excellence create a more powerful impact than those who deliberately showcase vulnerability in hopes of generating attraction or sympathy. Men must make themselves their mental point of origin rather than prioritizing women. The author notes he was most alpha when he didn't realize it, enjoying women naturally despite having little material wealth or social proof. It's when he made women a goal rather than a source of enjoyment that he became needy. Your mental point of origin is your internalized understanding of how you fit into your own frame. While children naturally put themselves first, boys are raised to provide for others, conditioning them to focus outward in hopes of reciprocation. Meanwhile, women are encouraged by society to maintain themselves as their mental point of origin. Making yourself your mental point of origin isn't about narcissism. It positions you to better help others and judge who deserves your effort. This often requires emotional trauma to realign, but it's the first step in killing the beta within. Women should only ever be a complement to a man's life, never the focus of it. Young men today, despite claims of independence, eagerly limit their potential by rushing into monogamy. The truth is that remaining uncommitted longer creates more opportunities. Scarcity increases value, and men pursuing ambitious goals are hindered by the time and emotional constraints of relationships. Men should remain non-exclusive until at least 30 to 35, allowing them to develop career, passions, character judgment, and understanding of human behavior. As men mature and increase in value, the balance tips in their favor, while women's sexual market value decreases. A single 35-year-old man with moderate success possesses two invaluable resources others lack: time and freedom. Rejection is a fundamental part of the male experience, occurring more frequently for men than women across all aspects of life, from dating and relationships to career advancement and social acceptance. Studies consistently show men face 3 to 4 times more direct rejection in dating scenarios and twice as many job application rejections before securing employment. While men develop various coping strategies to prevent or blunt potential rejection, including self-deprecating humor, overcompensation, and emotional withdrawal, the fear of rejection is often more debilitating than the actual experience itself. The most common and potentially damaging reaction men have to rejection is revenge, from petty acts like social media stalking to extreme manifestations of violence. However, indifference, not revenge, speaks volumes and demonstrates true emotional maturity. Any time spent contemplating revenge keeps you emotionally tethered to the rejection, preventing genuine healing and growth. Accepting rejection and moving forward is crucial for personal development, as living with rejection is ultimately better than living with regret over opportunities never taken. Putting rejection into perspective helps young men realize that what seems crushing in the moment often proves fortunate in retrospect. Many successful men can point to specific rejections, failed relationships, missed job opportunities, or social exclusions that ultimately led them to better outcomes. There are no real failures in rejection, only opportunities to learn and adjust course. Interestingly, while we often obsessively analyze our rejections, we rarely examine our successes with the same scrutiny, missing valuable insights about what works. Women frequently become indignant when confronted with the male experience of rejection due to their innate solipsism and the presumption that their experience is universal. This solipsism, reinforced by modern social equalist presumptions, leads women to interpret their imperatives and experiences as normative for all genders. When forced to acknowledge men's dramatically different experiences with rejection, women typically react with initial shock and disbelief, followed by attempts to force-fit men's experiences into feminine primary interpretations. This disconnect creates additional challenges for men seeking understanding and support when dealing with rejection. The impact of repeated rejection on male psychology can be profound, often leading to the development of protective mechanisms that may appear toxic or antisocial to outside observers. However, these mechanisms, including emotional stoicism, risk aversion, and social withdrawal, serve as survival strategies in environments where rejection is a constant threat. Understanding and addressing these patterns is crucial for developing healthier coping mechanisms and maintaining emotional resilience in the face of inevitable rejection. The author emphasizes that men can hope and thrive within a red pill context, but it requires completely internalizing red pill truths rather than attempting to force fit them into old blue pill frameworks. This transformation demands a fundamental restructuring of one's worldview, not merely adopting surface level changes. The key to living in a red pill context is systematically unlearning blue pill expectations and replacing them with aspirations based on red pill truths, a process that often takes months or years of conscious effort. Even when men achieve traditionally desired blue pill goal states, marriage, children, career success, home ownership, they frequently find themselves discontent and trapped in situations that don't deliver the promised fulfillment. Paradoxically, women come to despise the perfect guy in a blue pill context because such men often sacrifice their authentic masculine traits in pursuit of an idealized version of what they think women want. This stagnates the otherwise exciting, dynamic men they're actually attracted to, leading to a loss of respect and desire from their partners. The author stresses that with awareness and acceptance of one's conditions, a man can thrive within their context by focusing on personal growth and maintaining frame. While you can't control others' actions or women's hypergamy, you can prepare for them through strategic planning, protect yourself from consequences through legal and financial preparation, and make educated decisions based on empirical observation rather than societal programming. This includes developing multiple income streams, maintaining strong physical health, building a robust social network, and cultivating interests independent of relationships. Any man can unplug from societal conditioning, change his programming, and live a better life regardless of demographic, age, past regrets, or a present circumstances. The process begins with accepting reality as it is, not as one wishes it to be. Success stories range from divorced men in their 50s rebuilding their lives to young men in their 20s avoiding common relationship pitfalls by learning from others' experiences. The author concludes with his core principle. Women should only ever be a complement to a man's life, never the focus of it. This means developing a purpose-driven life where relationships enhance rather than define one's existence. This might involve pursuing entrepreneurial ventures, mastering a craft, building a legacy, or contributing to one's community, all while maintaining healthy relationships as a secondary priority rather than the primary goal.